Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Tuesday, October 11th, 2022. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and we do place the meeting audio on our website, which is wmata.com on the AAC page. Just a few helpful tips. For people joining via phone calls, you can press star 6 to mute or unmute yourself. If you would like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star 9. Everyone on the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute or unmute yourself. And if you go under reactions, you can click on the raise hand icon to virtually raise or lower your hands. Everyone is on mute at this time. Unless speaking, please keep yourselves on mute. It helps us eliminate any external noise. So thank you in advance for that. As you may know that we do have two ASL interpreters with us on this meeting. Please state your name before you make your comments. It helps them in doing their job well. It also helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who the speaker is at that moment. So thank you. And we do have two guest speakers. For any presenters using the visual presentation, just a friendly reminder to please describe your slides in detail for the convenience of our members and the members of the public who are blind or have low vision. excuse me. We do have a segment for public comments. And for that, we do try to allot 3 minutes time for each speaker. I would try to give a 30-second advance notice to alert that the 3 minutes are coming up to an end. We practice this just to make sure that if we have a few members who would like to make comments, everybody gets an opportunity to do so. If there is any time remaining, and if you have any more comments, we can surely come back. So please do follow that. Chair Calabia, I can go ahead and read the agenda, followed by the roll call of committee members.
Sure, please.
Thank you. Let me also share my screen for the convenience of everyone who can see the agenda. So give me a quick moment. Okay, I believe my screen is visible now.
I cannot reduce it now.
Okay. So we will go through the roll call as soon as I finish reading the agenda. Afterwards, Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. At 4:10, we have the team to discuss elevator and escalator updates. We have Mitch Nietzsche, the General Superintendent of the LS Department, and Ronaldo Grimaldi. At 4:35, we have the team to discuss better bus network redesign. Stacy Weisfeld is the planning manager from Metro. And we have Alana McKeeman. She's the project manager from Foursquare ITP. Afterwards, we will discuss AAC elections, followed by public comments. And the meeting is scheduled to be adjourned at 6 p.m. Now I would stop sharing my screen. I would go through the roll call of the AAC members. Please confirm your presence. Azar Atura, Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy.
Here, present.
Thank you. Tawan Farmer.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher. Marcy Goldstein. Timothy Howard.
Boy.
Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thomas Mangren.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsom. Bill Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush. Paul Summerford. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonow. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting.
Sandy, sure. Sandy told me that she may be attending a White House meeting on indoor air filtration. And if she does, it ends at about 5 o'clock, so she'll be here. But in any event, she alerted me to a possible absence. For now.
Thank you for informing me about that, Chair Calabia. At this point, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Please do. We now deal with the first item is the
agenda and meeting minutes.
Okay. We took care of the agenda, didn't we?
I read it. It still needs to be approved.
Oh, yes, and right. Yes. Must you approve the agenda, please?
So moved.
Second.
And, thank you. It's moved and second. And hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. Next. Anu, you're muted.
Minutes.
Okay.
I approve.
I don't know who's, Anu, you're muted and we got all kinds of static. I don't know.
Okay. So we did approve the meeting agenda, Chair Calabia?
Yes.
How about the meeting minutes from last month?
We are. And I just noted that Sandy is now with us. So mark her present. With respect to the minutes of the last meeting, we dealt, as we discussed the draft last week, we dealt with digital and electronic signage. We also heard about customer service operations, and finally the Silver Line Phase 2. Those were the topics that we covered, and as we discussed last week, we are to approve them this week. Do I hear a motion to approve the September bus rail subcommittee minutes?
Oh, I make the motion.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Okay, thank you. Hearing the motion and the second, I call for adoption of the minutes. Hearing no objections, the minutes are adopted. Now if we could move to the first item on the agenda. Is Mitchell here with us?
Yes.
I don't see him on my screen, but Mitchell, if you're here, please start your presentation.
Sure. Hello, committee members. Thank you for inviting Rolando and I back. Again, we prepared an update of where we are and where we currently are with some items for your review. Anu, do you have this to share or do you need me to share it? I believe my assistant Kim sent it to you.
Okay, it must have been recent email. I can share if you can give me a minute,
I can share if it's just as okay. Easy. Let me just make sure I can get it right. Hold on 1 second.
Absolutely, yes.
I believe it's this one. All right, let me know. Can you see that? It's a yellow and white PowerPoint.
Yes.
Yes, we can see okay. It.
Great. I just lost my main screen, so I'll do the best I can. Okay, so so what we put together here for you is this first slide shows our elevator and escalator availability, service availability, and this is through the fiscal year 23. So that will be July 1st to present. Currently, our escalator availability is at 92.7%, and our elevator availability is at 97.7%. And we jump to the next slide, and that's kind of, we put together, Rolando did us a favor, put us together a performance synopsis for the period spanning September. So this is September 1 through September 30th of this year. And our it shows our overall system availability for elevators are 97.3, and escalators that it is at an even 93%. What I wanted to talk about here is to let the committee know that some of the reason that you see elevators and escalators out of service, and what drives this number is these numbers are fully transparent, meaning if something is out of service for any reason, whether it be a mechanical failure or an escalator being replaced that may take 3 or 4 months, that we count that is not available to the public. So roughly, and there was another slide, it was a little bit too detailed, but roughly about half of our outages that you see that directly corresponds to the elevator and escalator system availability is for rehabilitation or replacement. So for example, escalator system availability is 93%. That means 7% of the time it's unavailable, and roughly half of that 7%, that 3.5%, is directly due to replacement and rehabilitation. So we wanted the committee to understand that.
Could you mention how that compares with last year, 2021?
So fiscal year 2022, I do not have those numbers handy, but we can. So Rolando, are you on the line? Would you have those numbers handy?
Offhand, improvement?
I'll pull them out shortly.
Okay, so what they're looking for is the fiscal year, what we ended the fiscal year, and I don't have them handy, but Tina, we'll get that up. Hopefully by the end of presentation, Rolando will have them for us.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. All right, the next slide is elevators and escalators that have recently gone out of service due to replacement and or rehabilitation. So just recently, Fort Taunton number 2 went out of service at the end of September for rehabilitation. and green belt number one went out of service for rehabilitation on September 30th. Within the last 3 days, Mount Vernon, number three, Metro Center South Side, number two for replacement, Mount Vernon, the elevator in number three, and Union Station is a major project we have going on over there to replace the two escalators on the Capitol side, the south side of the station, which comes up to Union Station and the bus loop over there. So that's a major rehabilitation project that we have going on, and those escalators are in sore need of replacement. Recently, the good news is we take things out all the time. I'm sure the public sees them, but they also go back into service after a certain time. So just in the last 2 weeks, Eisenhower Avenue, they had been working on that for about 3.5 months. Number one escalator over there just returned to service on October 5th. Shaw, which is number four, which is a short platform escalator, that just returned to service, and Potomac Avenue, number one, brand new escalator over there. And then in the last 30 days also, we had a platform escalator at U Street, the entrance escalator at Clarendon, and an entrance escalator at Metro Center on the south side, brand new, just recently returned to service in the last few weeks. Okay, I want to skip over here because we talked about this a few meetings ago, some of the designs that we were working with the team in replacing some of our call station buttons that I think some of the committee members have seen. We worked pretty hard over the summertime to get a bunch of new locations. I wanted to let you know about that. So stations that are now equipped with the new buttons and the new call stations are Arlington Cemetery, Minnesota Avenue, the Deanwood Station, Chevrolet, Landover, New Carrollton Station, West Hyattsville, PG Plaza, College Park, Greenbelt, Addison Road, and coming soon is Potomac Yards. As this is part of our new standard, they will all look like these buttons. One of the other things we talked about, I don't think we went live, and I believe it's live now, are new electronic LED signs for the public to see whether an elevator is working or not. This is a picture of the elevator at the Gallery Place station that is now live. We have added an announcement for those who are sight impaired that can hear. So if they go up and they push the button and it's out of service, they'll hear it. They'll hear the elevator is out of service. I am going to attempt to play this. Okay. It's a video, it's about 30, 40 seconds, and hopefully you can hear it. All right, here we go.
Mitch, this is Anu. You might have to include the audio when you play the video. Does that give you
an option? You hear that?
We don't hear it.
No. No. All
right, hold on, I gotta find a note.
Probably would show not as an option when you share.
Yes, Mitch, you have to unshare, share again, and
You have to unshare?
Yeah, you have to unshare, then when you reshare it, you gotta make sure that you include the audio. It's on the right side or something. In the meantime, the escalator availability were the same of what we have for now at 92.9. And elevator availability for fiscal year 2022 was
97.8. Okay, basic file. So on the right side, you're saying, Rolando?
Well, actually, that was on Team, on Zoom, I'm not
this
sure.
This is on Zoom, I'm not quite sure where that is. Darn, I really wanted the committee to hear this.
Okay.
Can you, Anu?
Let me see if I can share. Give me a moment.
Okay, and it would be the video. It would be the video attached to page 8.
Sorry, I'm trying to find the email first.
It's from Kimberly Steele. Ah, wait a minute. I think I found it. Sound. I found it. All right. Let me try this again. Can you see that screen?
Yes.
Great. All right. I'm going to try it again.
You can hear it.
Service, press help for assistance. Limited service, press help for assistance.
So that, to give you an idea, if it's out of service, it'll say out of service. And in this case, we'll be testing the limited service function on the escalator. So the good thing is, hopefully we've been more inclusive. We've heard the committee and we've heard Carol really be vocal about this. So hopefully this is something that the public will like and make it life a little bit easier for everybody. So look for that at a station near you. That it's going to be a slow rollout because currently we're working at Lafont Plaza, and it takes a little while. We only have one team that's doing this right now, but we do plan on putting this in our specifications and future contracts to get all the elevators that have this capacity soon. So I wanted you guys to know that.
The idea sounds ideal, but could you explain this? We saw apparently the door opened and someone in a wheelchair back up. But what was the message? It wasn't for the person who backed out of the elevator. For whom was the message?
No, they were just taking a video to give you an idea. The message was saying that the elevator was in limited service. So there's a function. The elevator will be in limited service for those in needs when we perform maintenance on it. Because when we perform maintenance, in most cases, the technician can just stop what they're doing and they can, they can assist a customer. In this case, that's not what was happening. I think somebody in a wheelchair just happened to be on the elevator as we were testing the sound to take the video.
Oh, okay.
So what we were trying to do was capture the video and capture the sign so you can hear it. And it just happened to be someone in the elevator at that time, because it's operated by a key switch. So for the elevator to know it's out of service or to know it's in limited service, there's actually a key switch that has to be operated by the station manager or the elevator technician.
I see.
So it's just another way for us, meaning Ellis and WMATA in general, to communicate better with everybody. And that's the end goal.
And Mitch, by doing this, you're providing a message for those who can only see, and also for those the same message for those who can't see those signs, which is similar to what we have our buses and our audible information on our buses.
Correct, Carol. Just trying to get better. Okay.
Anu, sorry, Mitch, go ahead.
All right, so the next slide is really just gives the committee an idea of how work orders are generated. It's just an initial report comes in. it's communicated through the webpage. The issue gets resolved once the issue, once the work order is dispatched to the technician, and then how it's resolved. Next point was lighting. We were kind of excited to talk to everybody about and get your feedback, which was we've switched over to the 3000 Kelvin lights that the committee felt was worked better. And they are currently at Federal Center Southwest, Virginia Square, Metro Center, Capitol South, Tenleytown, new escalators at Tacoma, the new escalator at Potomac, Brooklyn, Pentagon City, and very shortly, Capitol South will all have that new 3 Kelvin lighting. So I really wanted to get the committee's feedback. I know one committee member last time we spoke had seen the escalators at Pentagon City, and I can't remember. I thought she said that maybe it was better than the 6K, but maybe it could have been a little more brighter. So I just wanted to give it some time and get everyone's feedback and see what everybody thought.
I don't remember who that was. It could have been Doris Ray, or, and if she's not here, Barbara Millville, would you have any comment? Is there a lot of glare there, or would you happen to know, or could you only tell if you were there in person? Barbara? Is Barbara Millville with us?
She is. Barbara, do you? Oh, she was.
She is.
Barbara, you're on mute.
Yeah. Barbara, are you having trouble unmuting yourself?
Perhaps
this is Sandy.
Hi.
Well,
this is Barbara. Yes, I was.
Okay.
Yes, Pentagon City has a lot of glare on the escalator walls, as does a lot of the newer escalators that have been put in. And I believe I was there not long after that escalator came back into service. And I believe we recommended a little bit less than 6,000, but greater than 3,000.
Mitch, do you have any comment or response?
So I really would like if, so we don't mind making a change, but what we would really like is an overwhelming majority of committee members, because this isn't as easy as just changing a light bulb. And I don't want you to get me wrong, but being we're going to install so many more new escalators, you know, maybe we can get a little more feedback and get, you know, something from the committee member saying this is what we'd like to see, whether it be 4 or 5, 4.5, whatever it is. Because it takes a lot to do this. It's not as simple as just plugging in. I also would like to make the comment. So I think I know what Barbara's talking about, because the lighting external to some of the escalators that go in the tunnel appear to be much brighter, especially the LED lighting. That isn't controlled by Ellis. That's actually low voltage maintenance. Specifies those lights. So I don't know, Carol, if you can speak to our friends over in MNT about that, because I think that's what she's talking about, because I have noticed a difference.
Okay.
In lighting myself.
Right. We've been investigating something that a committee member complained about a couple weeks ago, and it was at U Street entrance, and in that particular entrance, the lighting outside of the escalators, not the ones that come with the escalators, but the ones outside, are very bright. You can actually see the light bulbs, and that's an issue. So that needs to be mitigated. We have, Barbara, do you want to talk about what you saw when you went there, when we went to review it?
Yes. There is lighting on the escalators, and there's also lighting that is attached to a building in the area, and that would be a pizza restaurant. Pizza restaurant is now closed, apparently temporarily at least, so that lighting would not be a factor right now. However, the lighting on the escalators that are outside, that issue would become more of a concern, in my opinion, if the rider is traveling in the evening. It would be magnified. The lighting there would be magnified. There are also some lights, artificial lights, that are attached to the canopy, and they shine directly down. I don't believe that those should be an issue, because that would mean the rider would have to be looking directly up at them. However, they may cause some shadows. Some of you might recall, at least 4 or 5 years ago, when there was a transit convention here, and a guy was from Vienna, Austria, and he made a comment in one of the local newspapers, and he said that our system looked like a disco. And that was because he saw the flashing lights on the train platforms, but it also could apply to what we're seeing here on the escalators. If you're standing on the right, and there are people walking on your left, passing by, it's the lighting is blocked by people's body, their legs and torso, perhaps, if the lights are high enough. And that, for somebody with partial sight, could cause shadows. The light is kind of playing in their eyes, and it also depends on if there's light bulbs on the left and also the right-hand side escalator walls. And it also depends on the rider's level of light sensitivity and the number of people passing by and how fast they're passing by. So, of course, during rush hour, this could be more impactful, because it's just always more impactful when you have some more sights and sounds to be concerned about. Okay. Does that answer your question?
Well, I think that what you're explaining is that it's not just whether it's designed properly, installed properly, or anything. There's also the dynamics of people moving around that creates certain flickering effects, etc. But I think that the blinding light that that was discussed earlier originates with the fact that that whole entrance is overlit on the sides of the escalator as well. Mitch, one of the things that Barbara mentioned after the site visit was that the stainless steel of the actual escalator is what is also shimmering some glare. So I'm sure we can't do anything about those.
The stainless is the new standard. I think that's what the authority is going
right.
to.
Barbara and the rest of our group went, Mitch, I don't think you know that Barbara is now part of ADAP.
No.
No, okay. So she is. That's why. Okay, so we went to another station, Friendship Heights, and where architecture directed us there on how they're lighting up the outside of the escalators, and Barbara felt that perhaps that was an improvement. So we're going to be working with you and like you said, low voltage and architecture to see how we can resolve some of these things. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, a key thing, if I might add, is the placement of the lighting fixtures on the escalators. We found that the lower the lights are placed, the less impact it will have on the riders.
I think that's what your new standard is, isn't it, Mitch?
Yeah, most of the new escalators have strip lighting above the nose of the step.
Okay. Well, this is Anu. Mitch, I don't know if you have any more slides to go or not, but we do have two questions. First one is Phil Posner, followed by Philippa. Dr. Posner, go ahead, please.
Yes, thank you. I had one lighting and one elevator question. It would be good to have a definition of reduced service, because when that sign comes up that you demonstrated, I'm not sure everybody knows what that means, that particular elevator can be used if you go to the station manager to use it. But I'm not sure that's intuitively obvious to everyone. The other question I have is on the escalators, and I've brought this up in previous years, but in certain stations, like Clarendon and Ballston, the closest escalator to the entrance is an up escalator. So at Ballston, one has to walk a quarter of a mile to get to a down escalator. Not good. At Ballston is particularly bad because there are two up escalators before you get to a down escalator. And I understand that some people have said we have to evacuate the platforms quickly and the heck with the people trying to catch a train. But a quarter mile to a down escalator is a long way to go. Also at Virginia Square, and this is not a WMATA issue, but the lighting outside the station, right at the top of the escalator, if you happen to be looking up as you're going up the up escalator at Virginia Square, you're blinded by that light. And it's a street light. And it's not a WMATA light, but it is on WMATA property. So those are my three comments. One is to see if we can define what reduced service means when that sign comes up. And then two, please make it easier for people to get to the platform when they're trying to catch a train.
So let me start with the first question first. Limited service means, at the end of the day, means service is available, right? What we maybe can do a better job of letting everyone know is to either see the station manager or push the button and call for the station manager and let the station manager know that you're in need of the elevator. I think there was a limited messaging that we could do in this trial, but we'll see what we can do to explore making that a little bit clearer to the folks in need. But yes, limited service generally means some type of maintenance. It generally means we're doing preventative maintenance, and it's quick as just contacting the station manager, and the station manager will reach the elevator technicians. Most cases, the elevator technicians probably on top of that elevator. But there are times you may not see them and they're in the elevator machine room, in which case someone would have to go get them. As far as Boston's concerned, are you, I just want to ask the question because I haven't been to Boston in a couple of months. Are we talking about because of the replacement project going on right now that you have to walk so far before you get a down escalator? Is that what you're talking about?
No, that's been the case at Boston ever since I've lived there, and since 2004. And the problem is the elevators on the side of the platform going into the city. On the platform going to Virginia, going to Vienna, it's fine. There's a down escalator right at the gate. But if you happen to be heading into the city, you have to go past two up escalators before you get to a down escalator.
So I do know what you're talking about. That changed a few years ago. I do remember. So I know this question's come up before in at other locations. Ellis supports configuration. We do not determine configuration. Configuration in this case, I believe, was determined by the Office of Planning and Rail Transportation. So at the end of the day, Rail Transportation is the actual group, they're the customer that determines the configuration of the escalator. So I'm really not trying to pass the buck on this question, but that's not an Ellis decision. I can only let them know what we've discussed in this meeting. And as far as your last question, Virginia Square, I'm curious now, so I'll take a ride out there one of these nights when the lights are when after sundown, because I'd like to see what you're seeing.
Please do.
The other thing I would point out is now that we're back to more six-car trains, some of the escalators let you, the down escalators let you down behind the last car, a distance. Clarendon is one of those. The down escalator at Clarendon is nice if you're on an eight-car train. It lets you out right there. But if you're on a six-car train, you didn't have to walk all the way back to the up escalator to get to the last car on a six-car train.
Understood.
Okay, thank you. Next is Philippa, and we are a little delayed, so...
Hi. I said, you know, I never take long.
I know.
This is Philippa. I'm sorry I missed that site visit. I think I was out of the country when it happened, and I'm pretty much just getting back. But I just wanted to clarify, because I wasn't sure I heard the U Street mentioned, and I was the one who raised that concern about the escalators, but it was from the mezzanine to the platform, and it was the lights that are actually on the stairs of the escalator that were just blazingly bright. And I, to the point, I don't even use it anymore. I just take the little elevator down to the platform. But I told, when I was with other people, well-sighted, they also complained about the lights being too bright. So I just wanted to be clear, it wasn't, those were the lights I was talking about. And yes, when you hit that escalator going down, there's something in one of those, I don't know, obelisk or whatever, that is blinding you as well.
Well, can I, what side of U Street?
The 13th Street exit is the only one I've used.
Okay.
And it was actually the lights on the stairs.
Okay. I'll notate that, and I'll try to send the committee a note.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philippa. Next is Sandy and Thomas. If you can both take a quick moment, and then we can wrap this topic.
This is Sandy. I was just wondering if we could have a list of the escalators that have the very bright lights, which I think I understood to be 6,000 kelvins. And a list of the escalators that have been modified to be 3,000 kelvins, so that we could actually ride around and sort of make comparisons, because I don't know which is where, or I don't know where to look. Thank you.
Good point.
Thank you, Sandy. Thomas, go ahead.
You're muted.
Yes, this is Thomas. My thing is, why you retraining the people who worked in the booth at the subway station? Make sure that they know not to try to pick and choose what they think that's an emergency or not. Because I have been on the subway line and the elevator wasn't working. And I have punched for to get help to try to figure out where do I go to get to my destination where I had to go to. What station do I have to go to? Because like some stations will have elevators out at several stations along the line. So they'd be like, oh, it's not an emergency. I don't want them guessing about anybody thing that they, when they ask for help, whether or not the elevator is out or whatever the issue is, they shouldn't be guessing about it because they cannot tell us how important our time is. And I go from meeting to meeting to meeting. They can't be telling that to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. We'll make a note of that. Okay, at this point, this is Anu. At this point, there are no more hands up. Mitch, thank you very much for the presentation.
Thanks a lot, Mitch.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you, Mitch, particularly because you and your team have been very proactive about trying to figure out different solutions for a lot of the things that the advisory committee has been discussing. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Carol.
Next topic, Anu, and I think Stacy and Alana.
Yes, and they are on. So Stacy, if you would come off of mute. If you'd like to share your screen or if you'd like me to share the screen, let me know.
Alana, were you gonna share the screen or will? Oh, you're muted, Alana.
Yes, I can, no problem. One second here. Oops. Sorry, one second.
We do see your screen.
Okay, great. There you go.
Okay, thank you. Well, hi everyone. We're very excited to be here to talk to you about the Better Bus Network redesign. And I can go through the agenda really quickly. So we will first give a project overview, process, and approach, and then discuss phase one engagement, which will be between October and November, this October and November. Then we'll talk about next steps and then have time for questions and discussion. All right, so some of you may remember the bus transformation project. The Better Bus Network Redesign is a recommendation that came out of that project. And so for the bus transformation project, the vision was that bus will be the mode of choice on the region's roads by 2030, serving as the backbone of a strong and inclusive regional mobility system that will support a growing and sustainable economy. So they had over a year of public and stakeholder engagement and input. And the outcome of that was that the project was adopted in January 2020, had four strategies and 26 recommendations to transform the bus system to provide fast, frequent, reliable, affordable service that feels unified and advances transit equity. Next slide, please. So out of that came the Better Bus Initiative. So it's a new initiative to rethink, redesign, and revitalize bus service. It represents the advancement of a key recommendation of the bus transformation project. And the network redesign that we're here to talk to you about today is one of many ongoing and future efforts. Some of those other efforts will include bus stop and shelter improvements, customer information, electrification, facilities modernization, priority lanes and signals. And some of those, a lot of those are already underway. Next slide, please. So the goals of this project to meet our customers and the region's needs are to increase access to frequent service, optimize and expand bus priority infrastructure, make the system easier to use and understand, align the network with development and travel patterns, align payment systems and fare structure, increase access to opportunity for customers, and to create a long-term, sustainable, predictable funding model to meet customers and region's needs. So the board adopted guiding principles in September 2022. And so the principles that will guide the project approach and decisions include to ensure a customer-focused and regional perspective, to engage and communicate authentically, inclusively, and transparently, to ensure equity is of value throughout the project, to allow customers' input, region's needs, data, and service guidelines to drive decisions, to attract customers with frequent, reliable, connective service, and to make cost-effective and data-driven business decisions. So we will be partnering and are partnering with local bus providers. We want to make sure that this is a holistic process for the service area. So Metro will work collaboratively with each jurisdiction to design or enhance effectiveness of local bus service. And so we have a map here, and in the kind of gray blue color, you'll see two jurisdictions where we will be evaluating both Metrobus and the local provider service. And so those jurisdictions are Prince George's County and the City of Fairfax. So we will be redesigning their system at the same time to work with our system. And then in blue color, those are the jurisdictions where we will be evaluating Metrobus only. A lot of these jurisdictions have already done their own redesigns. And so we will be just using the service that they came up with in their redesigns as part of our redesign. And so those jurisdictions include Arlington County, City of Falls Church, District of Columbia, City of Alexandria, and Fairfax County. And then the last color that you see on this map is green, and that is for Montgomery County. They are currently in the middle of their own bus network redesign, where they will be redesigning their service as well as Metro bus service that is in Montgomery County. And so we are working with them very closely to make sure that our two projects align. Next slide, please. So here is the roadmap, basically the timeline of what we will be doing as part of this redesign. So in the first block, you will see the bus transformation project, which I just discussed. That has already happened. And out of that came the 26 recommendations and action plan to transform bus. There were more than 8,800 survey responses from customers and 45 external project briefings. And so that is what led us here today. So the first block that is outlined in red here is the phase that we are in right now, that we are calling the planning foundations phase. So that will include the guiding principles that I just discussed, the goals and priorities I just discussed, and we will be looking at needs, gaps, and opportunities in existing service. And we are currently conducting engagement for that phase that will last throughout November. The next block is the second phase to develop alternative networks. And so here we will be developing network alternatives that we will bring to the public in spring of 2023 to get feedback on, and we will also discuss what the role of Metrobus should be in amongst all the jurisdictions. And so, as I mentioned, that engagement will take place in spring 2023. And then the final phase that we're calling the final network is where we will come to you with a recommended network for draft fiscal year 2025 budget. And so that network will take into account all of the feedback that we received in phase two outreach. And we will ensure that the we'll ensure network and service equity. And we will also come with a new jurisdictional subsidy allocation. And so this engagement will take place in fall 2023, about a year from now. And then after all of that is done and we are implementing the new network, which is what you see in the last box, we will determine staffing and fleet availability, infrastructure and facilities, communication and education, basically just everything that goes into implementing the new network. And we will determine the engagement process for that later on in the project. So for our technical approach in phase one, the goal is to guide and support the creation of network alternatives in phase two, which I just discussed. So there are three circles on this slide because they all work together and we're looking at all three of these in the first phase. So first circle is public and stakeholder engagement. And so the stakeholder engagement and public survey will get input on priorities and everything I just discussed in the previous slide so that we can determine how to what is important in creating the alternative networks. And then the second circle is existing conditions. So we're going to analyze performance and operations data of existing service, both metros, existing service and local bus operators existing service. And then the third circle is demand and market assessment. And so we will be identifying strong transit markets, so where transit will work well if we have better service and where it already works well, where it work better. We will look at transit need and factors limiting the competitiveness and accessibility in the region. So by analyzing location-based services and other data. And so location-based services basically show where people are traveling. It uses aggregated cell phone data so that we can see where people are traveling using all modes, not just metro. And we are going to be using both current data and 2019 data because we want to get an idea of where we could end up as we recover ridership after the pandemic. And I will turn this over now to Alana, who will talk about the engagement process.
All right, thank you, Stacy, and good afternoon, everyone. So I'm gonna talk first about some of the principles that are guiding our engagement, and then I'll go into more specifics. So our focus on the engagement, which is just one of those components of phase one, is to be really inclusive and ensure that all of the information we're collecting is informing the policy and ultimately the service decisions that come out of the project. So some of the things that we're keeping in mind in that process are the need to focus on customers' needs and benefits to our customers, engaging all audiences during all phases of the project, engaging customers and potential customers where they are, going to them, and focusing on, in particular, reaching historically underrepresented communities, communicating across multiple media, ensuring our plans, scenarios, and messages are accessible and understandable, and working with partners to extend the reach of our engagement. There's a graphic shown on the slide here. It says audiences in the middle and has six segments around it. And these are kind of six categories of partners that we're trying to engage through this process. So we've got community shown, and that refers to both customers and non-customers. The second segment there is Metro's workforce. So we'll be engaging both with bus operators as well as other staff. The third one is our technical committee. We have a committee formed with representatives from the jurisdictions throughout the region, most of which offer their own local bus service, as well as technical staff from within Metro. And those folks are guiding the team on kind of the technical decisions and process that will result in the new network. The fourth one there is the Community Connections Committee. That is a bigger tent group of about 50 different organizations. These include advocacy and rider groups, representatives from the business community and employers and big institutions, and community-based organizations. And there are three AAC members who are members of the Community Connections Committee. The fifth one there is elected officials. So we're going out and engaging with elected officials at all locals, at all levels of government. And finally, we are engaging with labor, and that includes meeting with union leadership. So I'm going to walk through here now some of the strategies that we're using to engage with each of these different audiences. So the first audience is labor. So I mentioned we're meeting with union leadership regularly throughout the process so that we can ensure that they are being kept apprised of what's happening with the project and having an opportunity to guide us and so we can understand their perspectives and maintain open communication. We're also doing a series of bus operator listening sessions. We are sending project team staff out to every single garage in the Metro bus system, as well as the ones in Prince George's County and the city of Fairfax, and giving bus operators a chance to tell us what they see as the biggest opportunities for improvements related to service. And for those operators who are unable to attend, there's a comment form that they can submit to us as well. The second group shown on the slide is customers. So we're using a variety of approaches to engaging with customers. We are kind of the biggest mechanism through which we're collecting input in this phase is our multilingual survey. So this is the survey online, and it is available online in English and Spanish, and it is available to be taken by phone in any of Metro's 9 languages. The second tactic there is bus stop chats. So I'll talk a little bit more about what that means in a moment, but we're conducting a series of 9 different bus stop chat events. We are distributing materials in all 9 of Metro's languages at our events. We're going to be holding an event in conjunction with the RAC meeting in November so that people, anyone from the public can attend that event and talk to the project team. We're doing a series of pop-up events. And we are also trying to engage with customers by putting information about the project on a variety of locations throughout the system to make sure everyone has a chance to become aware of the project. So we've got print and digital signage on buses and stations and at Metro properties. And we're also engaging with community-based organizations to ask for their help in posting additional print collateral to try to reach people that might be harder to reach digitally. The third group on the slide is Metro Workforce. So we are engaging with employees. In addition to the bus operator listening sessions, we're doing a podcast and a newsletter and running a video on some of the internal TV network to educate all Metro employees about the project so they understand what it is and how it might relate to their role in the organization. And we've been engaging with customer service so that they have some background on the project. And if people call in to provide feedback, they know kind of how to direct them and how to collect their input and how it will be used in our process. In terms of engaging with the jurisdictions and community organizations, we have the two committees that I mentioned previously, the Technical Committee and the Community Connections Committee. We're also doing a series of DOT director listening sessions. So going out to the heads of transportation from every jurisdiction in the region and giving them a chance to really understand exactly what we're doing and for us to take their input into consideration. Elected official briefings is another tactic as well. And finally, for other community engagement, we are doing a variety of other briefings upon request to various organizations throughout the region with a stake in the project. We have developed a digital communications toolkit on the website so that community-based organizations can just take some of the resources we've developed and distributed them with minimal effort on their part. We are developing a fact sheet for the project, doing a very robust social media campaign, and we've got print and digital advertisements running on a wide variety of platforms. We have also radio ads running. We have ads in various newspapers in various languages throughout the region as well. So in terms of online engagement, there's two main resources that we are trying to point people to. The first is our project webpage. That's our primary hub for all information related to the project, including details and timeline, information for people about how they can get involved and share their input. We have some frequently asked questions on the website, and we have an opportunity for people to sign up for our newsletter. So we'll be sending project updates to our subscribers throughout the project. And the public survey that we're conducting is seeking feedback from people on what works well today with bus service, what some barriers are that people are facing in using the bus, what people's desired outcomes for the network redesign are, any usage behavior changes from pre-COVID. We want to understand if people are using the bus more or less than they were previously and why, and people's familiarity and understanding of the bus system. So all of the input that we collect through the survey will inform the project goals, objectives, and metrics. The survey launched on Friday, October 7th, and will be open through November 11th. And like I said, it's available online in English and Spanish and by phone for all 9 of Metro's languages. So some of the events that I talked about earlier. So I mentioned that we're doing a series of pop-up events. We've got 15 different events. Those are where we send our team to very transit accessible locations throughout the region, and we set up a booth, and it's this very interactive structure. We've got a table and some activities that people can complete to give us their input, and they can also take the survey there, and we're offering prizes for completing our survey and things like that. They can also give us testimonials if that's something they're interested in. We're also doing a series of bus stop chats, and those are kind of similar purpose of engaging with customers to gather the input, but less formal. So this is a way to reach communities or people that may not be as likely to approach us at more formal events like pop-up events. But we talk to bus riders about what their key priorities are for improving bus service. And then finally, I mentioned we're doing the Meet the Project Team event in conjunction with the RAC meeting next month. So we'll be having both digital and in-person options to talk to our project team members about the project and provide input at that event. There's a map shown on this slide that shows the locations of all the 24 public events that we're doing. So the purple triangles are representing the pop-up events, yellow circles are representing bus stop chat events, and there is one kind of hybrid event occurring this Friday that the GM will be attending at Anacostia Metro Station as well. So the point here is that they're really distributed throughout the region at key locations where we hope to encounter as many bus riders as we can possibly reach out to. The next slide is showing a list of the 15 pop-up events in terms of dates and locations. Obviously, this is too much to digest now, so we can share that or can answer any questions about any specific locations. But we've got them by jurisdiction, so you can see we've got a variety of spots in the region that we're going to really make it as easy for people as possible to engage with us. The 9 bus stop chat events aren't shown on this list because those are just kind of more informal conversations that we're trying to have with bus riders. So what we are asking for all of you today, we would love to have your help in spreading the word about the project, because we know the quality of what comes out of the project is only as good as the inputs that go into it and what we hear from people. So there's several ways you can do this. One is to visit and share our project website. You can sign up for our e-newsletter to get updates at various points when we launch additional engagement phases, and in the meantime as well, get kind of the exclusive take on everything that's happening related to the project. You can leverage our digital communications toolkit to share information on social media if you're a media user or any newsletters that you know of. We would encourage all of you and have you encourage others to take the public survey so that we can understand your priorities for bus service improvements. And please spread the word about or even attend our pop-up events if you are able. So next steps, as I mentioned, we've got the survey going now through November 11th, as well as the variety of events, the pop-ups and the bus stop chats. And then again, that meeting at the RAC next month on Wednesday, November 9th, that will again have both in-person and hybrid and virtual options. It'll be a hybrid. And we will come back to you again to brief you on, give you updates on what's happening with the project in subsequent phases. So I've talked enough, pause there, and love to hear what questions all of you have, and kind of understand how we can best engage with you and get your input.
Well, thank you, Alana. If I could ask this question related to when I first joined the AAC some years back, WMATA was launching the bus transformation project. You did mention that, and I'm sure along the way, the pandemic must have affected that adversely. But in general, would you give the bus transformation project in terms of its goals an A plus? And if not, where do we need to look for problems that we can overcome in this new ambitious project?
Well, I would hesitate to give an opinion about whether it's an A plus or not. I wasn't with Metro at the time, but I will say that this is just an extension of the bus transformation project. So the Better Bus Initiative is basically an umbrella over that covers a lot of the initiatives that were recommended from the bus transformation project that I mentioned earlier in the presentation. So this is more of a continuation of bus transformation project than anything.
Well, my point is, since there must have been some problems, what have we learned so that we don't, so that we learn from the problems for this new, in a sense, bus transformation project?
So I wasn't here at the time, but I do know that the bus transformation project, I believe, did a lot of outreach. And because of that, we're able to create recommendations that really covered a lot of the needs of the system. And so for Better Bus, we are going to do even more extensive outreach if possible, all of the things that Alana discussed. And so I think those are really the key takeaways, is how important outreach really is.
Related to that, the outreach, several years back when I was in Los Angeles, they were in the middle of a bus planning project too. Interestingly enough, in their metro stations, on their PIDs, their electronic messaging screens, they advertised the fact that they were involved in their version of a bus transformation project. Is such electronic outreach through the metro system envisioned?
I'll let Alana take that one, since she is on the consultant team leading that effort.
The short answer is yes. We have... I haven't checked the status like as of today, but we are in the process of posting signs on buses and looking to have some of those digital advertisements in stations as well, either in this phase or definitely in future phases as well. And we also have a team that is putting yard signs on metro properties just around the stations and the bus bays, to just kind of heighten the awareness and get people, heighten awareness about the project.
Thank you.
And I do believe that the that signage and promotion is on top of the station manager kiosks and rail stations right now.
Anu, are there any questions from members?
Chair Calabia, Sandy Newsel has her virtual hand up. Sandy, if you would unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, this is Sandy. So at your 24 outreach events, the pop-up and the bus, the different locations you're going to, will you take some people who speak other languages, Spanish, some of the other languages that you're addressing, and perhaps even someone who can do sign language for the deaf community, or people who are attuned to recognizing people who have vision issues, either because they have a white cane or they're using a guide dog, and approach them in a respectful way and ask them if they would like to you know, participate or contribute comments?
That's a great question. So the first one you asked about was language. So we do have bilingual English and Spanish speakers at every single event that's occurring. And many of our interactions are in Spanish. There's also a few targeted locations. We've looked at the demographics of the people that live nearby and where we've identified a need for additional languages like Chinese or Korean or Vietnamese, we are providing interpreters for those events as well, or bilingual ambassadors. I believe for ASL, if someone requests that in advance, we can supply an ESL interpreter for those events as well. And you know, to the larger point, every staff that is attending those events has been, we actually did a big training on Friday on how to interact with people from various backgrounds and who have various disabilities and how to do so respectfully. So our staff have a lot of experience with that. So I feel very good about our efforts to really be inclusive and reach people through those events.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy. This is Anu, Elena. Since you mentioned if people request the ASL interpreting services, how and where would they reach out to request that service? Would you have that information now, or is there something you can provide us later?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't have the number offhand, but I will try to put it in the chat in a little bit, okay. Or definitely email you if I can't find it right away.
That would be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
This is Anu. Chair Calabia, we have two more people with their hands up. Darnese Bush, followed Please. By Phil Posner. Darnese, come off of mute and go ahead and ask your question.
Hello, this is Darnese. I'm glad to hear about this bus project. I'm a participant in planning a conference that will take place on October 31st, and we have exhibit tables. The conference is basically about the state of disability in the District of Columbia. And I could arrange for you to have an exhibit table for the full day. And you could also utilize our ASL language people there, and you can interview people from the community because it's a consumer forum for people aged, adults. They get support services throughout the District of Columbia. And it's also a youth summit for students 14 and above that want to transition from school to work. So that would be a great opportunity to distribute your surveys and find out a lot of information. If you're willing, and I can give you my number, or you can give me a call, and I could arrange it for you. Because I see that you don't have anything listed on that day, although it is Halloween.
If you could share your contact information, that would be great.
Okay.
And Anu has our contact information as well, if you don't want to.
Yeah, and it'll right now take place on the 31st, and it's from 8:30 to 4:30. And it's at the Washington Plaza, which is at number 10 Thomas Circle, Northwest. So it would be great if somebody will participate.
Great. Thank you so much for that invitation.
This is Anu. Darnese, I'll be more than happy to get everyone coordinated so that information can be shared. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Dr. Posner and then Steve Kaffin.
Yes, good afternoon. You're doing a great job gathering data, and just from experience with the transformation project, it's important that you share the data with all the jurisdiction elected officials, as well as their technical staff. And in fact, you might also contact them to find out what regions within their jurisdiction they really would like firsthand data from. The second thing, obviously, everything costs money. And currently there are large sums of money being made available through the federal government, and the Department of Energy, particularly for bus improvements in rural areas and disabled individuals and low-income individuals. Again, getting information to Senator Duckworth's staff in the Senate is a great way to go. There are also several disabled people in the House. And so ultimately, it will depend upon cooperation from all of the jurisdictions and the money to pay for everything. Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you for that feedback. We are working with our government relations staff at Metro to reach out to all of the jurisdictions, to the elected officials. I've been in touch with the folks at their at the local bus providers to get all of their data. So we are working to keep them as updated as possible and to share information, because you're right, that's going to be extremely important. And we are working with our, again, our government relations team, with their the person who works on federal affairs, to look at all different sorts of funding options.
Great, thank you. Steve, if you would come off of mute and ask your question.
Okay, sure will. You know, from the standpoint of, give me a break. You know, just don't. Okay, hi. From the standpoint of methodology, it's very comprehensive. And you really thought it through in what you're doing, which covers the territory I think you want to cover. I think what's most important maybe is going to be the engagement with the public, because the public knows their buses. The public has known their buses for decades, and they may be the best sources for you. May I suggest that there are certain modes of engagement that work better than others, especially if you want to get detailed, open-ended feedback. And, you know, a casual conversation doesn't really get the preparation that you want from somebody saying, here's the issue, because blah, blah, blah. So you might want to set up a phone number, just staff with one or two people. I wouldn't call, the word ombudsman is a little awkward, but I'm talking about somebody who, or some people who will engage with people who want to talk more open-ended than perhaps a survey will allow, or an interaction at one of the at a bus stop will allow. And I think something important that I saw there is your ability, or the ability of the initiative, to engage with the regional companies, including the circulator, because there are some services which may best be provided by the circulator. And I don't think this has been looked at. It's been principally two operations, one not trying to step on the other. And this may be a good opportunity because times have changed. You know, I'm not going to go into specifics, but this looks great. And it's very exciting. I look forward to seeing how it evolves. So thank you.
Great. Thank you for your feedback. And just so everyone on the call knows, we have provided an FAQ to WMATA's customer service line. So if people call into customer service questions or anything like that, they will be prepared to answer as best as they can.
I need to respond to that. I've been using the online customer service vehicle for a very long time, years, I have not gotten a response when I've asked for one. Now, I get an acknowledgement immediately that the input has been received, but you may want to check on that, because some people, others have told me the same thing, and they feel they're not sure that what they're saying actually gets into the system and gets looked at, just because there's no response back, even though they requested it. So you may want to take a look at that vehicle, because it can be a very effective vehicle, that customer service line, but the provider of the information should get some kind of feedback besides that automated response that comes within 5 seconds, if you know what I mean.
So okay, that's really good to know. Thank you.
And I guess I'll add, Steve, you mentioned kind of figuring out the roles of Metrobus versus DC Circulator, some of the other local providers. That's something else that the technical team is going to look at through this project.
That's great. Thank you. See you tomorrow, perhaps.
Well, we will see you tomorrow. Two of us are on the committee that's going to be working with you. We'll see you tomorrow morning. Are there any other questions, Anu?
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. I do not see anyone else's hand up at this time.
Well, then I can thank Stacy and Alana, and I hope you and your other staffers are regular bus riders, so you can see up close what happens. Many of us experience it and can't believe some of the things that we experience. And maybe if you experience them too, you'll help correct that in the months and years to come. Thank you very much, Stacy and Alana.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. See you tomorrow. Next up, on the agenda, I think, are the nominations. Is that it?
The exciting topic is AAC elections. And I just want to say that we are looking for nominations for the AAC leadership. And there is some information that I'm trying to verify before I can send a list of the eligible members, if there is any restriction. So I do apologize that it has been delayed than I was hoping for. I was hoping to have it sent by now, but I have not been able to do that. As soon as I can verify the information that I'm looking for, I would be sending out another email with the list if there is any restrictions. And to begin with, we can start taking nominations or self-nominations from our members. And that would be for the AAC chair, AAC first vice chair, as well as the second vice chair. The term limit is 2 years for this AAC leadership, these positions. And once we get the nominations from anyone intending either to self-nomination or someone else nominates another member, then we can have some speeches from the nominees at the AAC meeting in November. It'll be great to hear what the nominees have to share, hear their comments, and then we can go through the motion of voting to determine who the new leadership would be.
Point of clarification, Anu.
I'm sorry?
A point of clarification.
Yes.
You mentioned positions of chair, first vice chair, and second vice chair. You did not mention the positions of chair of the bus rail subcommittee or the vice chair of that committee. nor of the Metro Access Subcommittee, the chair or vice chair.
Tina, those are appointed by the president. I mean, by the chair.
I thought they, all right, okay, yeah. I'll take.
They actually are appointed, if I get it correctly, Tino, they are appointed by the chair, and then I think the full committee gives that a their blessing.
Okay,
but well, then thank- the yeah, but then I think also then the chair of the Metro Access and Bus Rail, they can select their own vice chairs.
Okay. Thanks for the clarification.
That's and Anu, since I have the floor, I was going to ask two things. I was going to ask, is there a term limit for chair? Is it 6 years? I don't remember. I haven't read the bylaws in a while. In other words, you can't serve more than 6 years or 4 years. I can't remember what it is.
A total of three terms with 2 years.
Yes. Okay. 6 years. Okay. What's the other? So I would, the other thing I would say is it's rather obvious, but I've seen this messed up before. Before you nominate, if someone is going to nominate another person, make sure that the other person that you're nominating wants the job before you nominate them. It seems rather obvious, but I have been in situations where that has not been the case. It gets to be rather embarrassing. Anyway, but sure. You know what I mean. Yeah. Okay.
No, that's a great point. Because it's always good to have a communication between, you know, people.
Yeah. And I would also then also urge folks, think about it. You've got a lot of good people here that have experience. So although the responsibility is important, you've got a lot of support on this committee to help you along the way. So don't be afraid of it. It's a good opportunity. And for the most part, this committee is pretty friendly. No, it's a good group to work with. It's a good group to work with. It really is. And this is important to a lot of people. So think about it. And if you want to do it, you know, there's a bunch of us on here that will support you and make sure you're successful. Thanks.
Yeah, I agree with you when you say the group is pretty friendly and whatnot. And I love you all.
Yeah.
Thank you, Thomas. Dr. Posner, you want to add something? Please go ahead.
Yes, I think something that the committee should decide, and that is how the election will take place. Pre-COVID, when everything was done in person, a paper ballot was handed out at the meeting, and then it was turned in, and the votes were then counted, and they were counted by staff with a member of the committee as oversight, inspector of elections. Now that we are meeting virtually and in person, I think the committee should decide how they would like to have the voting take place. I think it's important that it be anonymous voting, so that the candidates aren't sitting in a room watching themselves get votes or not get votes, or people feel intimidated or not intimidated. And also some people I can't physically be there, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's a decision that the committee should make. There are discussions that we have had previously prior to COVID, but now it's even more complicated because of the combination of virtual and non-virtual. And I would leave it to the committee to discuss at the next AAC meeting in November.
And
there is no immediate urgency to say, we're going to do it now. I think you need a quorum. I think you need a discussion. I think you need a real vote of the majority and then move forward. Because if you send the new chair, first vice chair, second vice chair to the board, if you don't send it on November the 3rd, the world will not come to an end. If you send it on November the 10th or the 14th. But think about it. It's important. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Phil.
Chair Calabria, this is, I know, since Dr. Posner were, he was giving recommendations or giving information about how the voting process could be conducted. That is a great point. Excuse me. Just to add to that, I can say that if the committee decides, if the voting could be done through Zoom, we could create surveys. I believe I should have that capability in our plan to create surveys where our members could provide their voting. But I would verify that and I can share more information depending upon what the committee, how the committee would like to conduct the voting. Ronnie, I see your hand is up.
Yes.
And if you would give me just a quick moment before I ask for you to make your comments.
Okay.
I just want to say this to Dr. Posner. If you would share your experience about the responsibilities of the AAC chair with the members so they also have an idea of what this position requires or needs, that would be great for all the members. So, Darnies, go ahead and make your comments, and afterwards I would request Dr. Posner to share some information.
My comment is basically, I would like to make a motion that we hold this election virtually by Zoom.
Do we have a quorum? I don't believe we do. And I think you would actually probably, although I agree with you, Denise, I think that we would want to hold off and make this motion at the AAC meeting so that everyone would see it. I think that's a good idea. Phil, I think you said if we don't, I mean, if we have an election at the meeting, in nominations and elections at the meetings, the results wouldn't, you know, they'll be effective like the next month, I guess, or whatever. You know, you'd have someone, maybe Denise or whatever, running the next meeting. But yeah, I think we have plenty of time to do this, but I think we need to wait till the fully AACC meeting. And also you need to then also describe how you're going to do the elections. And, you know, I'd forgotten that they had a AAC member and another member counting. So that was good. So those kinds of things need to be decided, but they need to be decided by the full committee.
Okay, well, I'll withdraw my motion and I'll table it.
Okay, yeah, that's good. We can do that.
Anu, is there any experience on the, and actually, Patrick, you can help with this. Have there been any elections amongst the RAC in the time that there's been a pandemic and we've been dealing with virtual meetings?
So the RAC just had their meeting and they had it in a sort of at their meeting in an open forum. But I think that Anu brings up a good point. There was not much, there was no, none of the elections were contested at the RAC. And I don't know that there would be here, but I think that it's fair for us to think about it and then bring it up at the AAC meeting with a plan. And certainly we can discuss it, you know, on the list here. And that way everyone can weigh in and then we can come up, make a decision at the AAC meeting.
Okay.
And my thinking is that at that meeting, probably I think Denise would be, as first vice, would be running that meeting. We'll see. Yeah.
She's not on this meeting.
She's not on this. No, she's not on today's meeting. At least I didn't see her earlier, but.
No, I didn't either.
Okay.
Yeah, no, Denise is having a health issue with her husband right now. So she's. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought so, Phil. I wasn't sure, but that's what I was thinking. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. But that's probably the way that meeting will go, I would think. Yeah.
So in effect, are we delaying everything until the AAC when all the members or more of the members or a quorum at least is?
I think you have to do that, but that doesn't, I don't think that limits a discussion as far as the email list. So that if, as Anu brought up today, we have an election coming up, we're going to need three positions filled. And how would the election like to be conducted? I have my thoughts, but I think rather than say them here, I would add them to an email and say, I think I would like to see elections conducted this way, A, B, C. And then of course, voting can be done by A, B, C, and see if people agree with me.
Yeah, I believe that by next week, that Anu should be able to get the information and have a list ready for everybody at the Metro Access meeting. And that's everybody on the committee, even if they don't attend the Metro Access meeting, which has a list of eligible candidates. And then if people would like to nominate based upon that criteria, who's eligible, have the nominees ready for the AAC meeting and let the people nominated give their speeches. And then we can move on and do the vote, sometime between AAC and bus rail or, whatever. But, it's up to the committee to decide. But I think Anu should have the information she needs to send out the list to everybody by email. And she always
in other words, who is eligible, Phil? That's good. Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
The criteria for eligibility. Yeah.
Once everyone has a list of who is eligible, then individuals can either self-nominate or be nominated by somebody.
Yeah.
And okay. Then we will have a list of people that are interested in what they're doing.
I don't know. I'm thinking of nominating Chris Blake. What do you think?
Who?
Chris Blake.
Well, we can nominate him to a special position as chair of the AAC for the month of August.
Oh, good. I like that. I think that Miss Rush would second that nomination. That's true. And we would then make Denise Inspector General.
Yes, one other thing I might suggest again. Rather than nominating someone for chair, nominating someone for first vice chair, nominating someone for second vice chair, nominate someone for leadership. Then when the election takes place, the person with the largest number of votes becomes the chair. The person with the second largest number of votes becomes the first vice chair, and the person with the third number of votes becomes the second chair. Because sometimes we have had two people nominated for first vice chair or two people nominated for chair, but then they couldn't be nominated for first or second vice chair. So if they lost the chair vote, they were out. And so this way, if you just say, hey, these people are good, they go to all the meetings, they participate, and they ought to be in the leadership. And so if you just have nominations for leadership and then Anu can put out a ballot and then just vote, and then the top vote gets chair, second, first vice chair, and third, second vice chair. Just a suggestion.
Dr. Posner, you read my mind. That is exactly what I was going to share, that could be an option. Another point comes to my mind, which I would like to share with the committee to think about is, since past practice has been counting of the votes with staff and one AAC member, perhaps the Zoom may not work out for that reason. Perhaps we could do email to me and one designated AAC member, whether it's the, well, that could be decided upon.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest.
And that's, those two email addresses could be used for sending the votes by the everyone on the committee.
That's what I was going to suggest too. Yeah. I think it's a little more private and confidential, just as the paper that we used to do, and the fact that you're having somebody from the committee be kind of an authenticator, as Doris, I think, advocated for last year, I think is very good. So yes, thank you, Patrick. Yes. It was on my mind and I forgot to mention it.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah.
So Anu, you have, you understand what the process will now be?
As further discussion, yes. But if there's any further discussion about it, sure. I mean, you know, that's why we are having communication, so that we are all on the same page. And
okay.
And Mr. Blake just added a message. Oops, where is my chat?
Christian? Yeah,
it's sort of a variation of ranked choice voting. It's not really ranked choice voting.
Not quite. Okay, my fault. My bad.
Okay. I guess Dr. Posner read it faster than I could find my chat.
Was really just for Dr. Posner. I was just having a little fun. Thank you.
Okay. Darnese, I see you have your hand up, followed by Tawan Farmer. Darnese, go ahead and then Tawan Farmer.
Oh, my hand is up because I want to make sure that we understand what the responsibilities are for the chair and the leadership, actually.
Great point. And that's what I had requested Dr. Posner to share a moment ago.
So they've got some thoughts. And so I think
that helps. After that, I'm going to mute you so that we don't hear your.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. We haven't heard from Tawan first. So why don't we let him go and then I will go over the responsibilities.
Sure. Mr. Farmer, go ahead.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I assume I'm obviously in my first few months, so it is likely that I do not qualify for any of those positions. I already respect the fact that there is a great responsibility to any of those chair, vice chair, and second vice chair positions, and we'll see what that looks like after my term is fulfilled and hopefully elected into a new term, if that is meant to be. My question today is about, give me one moment. There we go. My question today is actually about protocol. I know there are several people who just a moment ago suggested the alternative approach to the election, but I am sure that there is a procedural guideline regarding elections. And although I don't dispute the option of electing based upon majority and then submajority and so forth, is that technically a part of the voting protocol that is indeed an availability or just an option we wish to suggest to the table regarding, you know, being able to vote in what I perceive as a more traditional approach versus the alternative, you know, majority, submajority, and in turn, secondary submajority to establish the chair, vice chair, and second vice chair?
Historically, back to the dark ages, when Patrick was the chair and even before him, annually, there was a discussion by the committee to decide how they would handle the election that year. Many times in the years I have been on the committee, there weren't any candidates. Similar to the RAC has not had anyone that wanted to be chair because of the responsibility. And so the committee in the years I have been involved, and Patrick can say the same, it's more or less been up to the committee to decide. And this time, because of COVID, the last 2 years, it's really made things unusual. The actual bylaws just say there will be an election. And in fact, the first bylaws had the election for July. And the committee said, well, wait a minute, we're getting all these new people on the committee who show up the first day and have to vote on a chair. They've never been to a meeting. And so the actual format of the elections have been quite liquid over the years. And again, this year, because we're in flux of in-person, virtual, et cetera, I think it's important for the committee to talk about it and discuss what will give them the most effective leadership. I think that is permitted in the bylaws, because the bylaws do not really spell out this is the way we're going to do it. On the second Monday in November, we will have an election, and no one will be within 100 feet of the polling place when it's done. So I think flexibility is king.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Thank you.
I just want to announce this for public comment section. Steve Kaffin would like to make a comment. So if Dr. Posner, could we have your, and could we ask you to share the information about as far as the responsibilities are concerned?
I'll be happy to do it.
5:55, we could have Steve's comments. Thank you.
Yes, I can do it really quickly. According to the bylaws, basically, all it says is the chair will chair the meetings and will select the head of the subcommittees. That's it. The vice chair will do things when the chair is not available. The second vice chair, similarly, will do that. Now, again, those are the only things that are spelled out, plus the terms. But what we have done over the years is treat leadership as a leadership team that includes the chair, first vice chair, second vice chair of Bus Rail, vice chair of Bus Rail, chair of Metro Access, vice chair of Metro Access. And so when it comes to any information that comes to me, it is forwarded to all of those people, including the agendas for the different meetings. So the AAC agenda is made up not by me, not by Anu, not by Mr. Blake, not by Ms. Lopez, but by all the people I just named. And the same goes for Bus Rail agenda and also Metro Access agenda. Now, we've also found that to be effective, it is important to directly know what is going on at the level of the board, because we report to the board. And so either the chair, the vice chair, the second chair, vice chair, will attend all of the board meetings and the board subcommittee meetings so that they know what's going on. Again, now that things are virtual, being there physically used to be great because you could talk directly with them. It's eye to eye and it's great. But now everything is done on YouTube and also on the website. So again, I have been very lucky. I'm retired. So I was able to physically go to every meeting. They knew what I looked like. I knew what they looked like. When we had double, Patrick and I would go together when he was chair and I was first vice chair. And he would give his talk. And then he'd say, Phil, do you have anything to add? And then I would give my talk. And then at the end of the meeting, as soon as there was an intermission, I would head over to a friendly board member and reiterate some of the things that we had heard. Or even in the restroom on occasion. And so it's not a bad thing. And having women in the leadership is important. Now there are four female board members. There's a lot goes on in the restroom. So anyway, don't be frightened by the requirements because they're easy. Chair the meeting and help put together the agenda and appoint the subcommittee chairs. But effectiveness is working as a team, and that's important. Know what's going on and stay focused. That's your job. Stay focused. Have the committee decide what's the most important thing. Is it fare? Is it where you sit on a metro access bus? Is it the design of the bus stops? Is it lighting in some particular place? Well, that's for the committee to decide as a whole. And then leadership to stay focused on that and not go off on a tangent. And I've gone on a tangent, so it's time for Steve to have public comment.
Thank you, Dr. Prosser.
Steve, you're muted.
Here, okay, I'm not anymore. how can I follow that? My goodness, Phil. Everything we need to know. Thank you. You know, I have some silver line issues. You know, we had the discussion, Tina, we had the discussion of the silver line, but, you know, we all tried to communicate ours and a couple didn't come up and we were pressed for time. Could I just send them to you and to Anu to put in the minutes rather than spend the time going through them? Would that be all right?
You mean as an addendum to?
Yeah.
Actually, Tina, the only way you let Steve do that is if he offered to be vice chair of Bus Rail.
Right.
You know,
that's Steve.
Okay. Hey, I don't want to lose my 3 minutes, but I have an answer to that. Don't take my 3 minutes away. All right, so I'll send these to you. You know, they deal with a third of the station not being covered. An announcement is going to need to be made to get people to move into the covered areas, particularly people who have difficulty dealing with snow and other precipitation. This kind of thing. I'll send them to you. How am I doing? Good. Fare evasion, which we didn't talk about, but you've been very prominent, Tino, in sending things out as they come in. You know, with respect to fare evasion, the DC Council is about to vote on a $100 per citizen of DC credit that would be issued to each person to use public transit. What I would suggest is perhaps $50 of that $100 a month credit be directly transferred for bus service. My concern is there's probably 10% or even more people who are out of the system. And they're the neediest of the people who often walk past the operator because they just don't have the means. And this would resolve an issue. And in fact, if we could get that, if that was approved to be transferred immediately by the DC City Council, WMATA could try a one-year experiment of free buses. It would speed up buses. It would get people to ride on the buses who've never ridden before. And they haven't approved it finally, but that's a suggestion that might work. $50 handling the way they're going to do for rail, but transfer the other 50 directly for buses. That's about it for today. But it's an issue we should talk about. Thank you.
Okay. Let's do that. It is now 6 o'clock. May I ask that separate from any discussion we previously had in the past few minutes regarding elections, I'd like to talk to Phil and Patrick and Anu and Carol about an issue. This would not require interpreters because it would just be about a separate matter entirely. So if I could take a motion to adjourn in a second. Hearing no objection, this meeting is adjourned. And please, Patrick and Phil and Anu and Carol, if you could just hang there a few minutes so we can discuss something privately. Thank you.
Okay, Eric. Have a good week. Yeah, goodbye.
Bye. Good night, everyone.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.